Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Thank you for joining us on this experimental program where not only can you hear us, but you can see us too. We're super excited to be trying this out. Our show is here on UCY.TV. We're super happy to be celebrating a couple years of radio now, and we're expanding, hopefully, with this new technology soon. We were going to be celebrating the importance of understanding roots tonight, especially in relation to saving water, which is a hot topic right now, especially in California. And a lot of people are in disagreement about conventional farming methods, animals being raised, irrigation, types of soil, the necessity to grow crops. So people are arguing over, where are we using our water? And is it sustainable? Is it economical? Is it rational? And Robert Carrick, who was the scheduled guest tonight, had some mishaps with his technology. So we'll follow up with him soon. Hold on a second here. I'm hearing that I don't come through on the video. So excuse me while I check our little technical glitch here. Let's see. Why are we not coming through? Give me just a second here. Call. Test, 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 test. Okay. Is it because of this? I'm not quite sure. I think everything on my end says we're coming through, but regardless, we were talking about how Robert Carrick has been mapping the nervous system or the root system of plants, and he's discovered some really interesting information in regards to how do they grow, where are they taking in most of their nourishment, and this is important because it can help us understand where to apply water, where to apply compost, where to apply mulch. So we'll follow up with him soon, hopefully, and we'll learn all about that. But in honor of getting back to your roots, I wanted to talk about our roots as a network. And of course, I want to share some valid news stories with you guys. Some important things are going on in our world right now where we're all being captivated by presidential candidates, and they're asking you to vote for them. And a really important article that I really enjoyed on theantimedia.org, you guys can check it out with me, is who owns your candidate? Like, and this is something that people joke about, you know, that these candidates are owned by corporate America and their pockets are being filled with their intentions, and this affects everybody. But this opens up a great topic of conversation here is, who are these people actually controlled by? So, in honor of water, give me a second here. Now you guys get to see me chugging water. which is quite interesting. So it's a new era of American politics, says Jake Anderson. With regard to campaign finance, the Citizens United Supreme Court ruling and the arguably worse McCrutchen, excuse my pronunciation, versus FEC ruling opened the doors to unrestricted corporate funding of our national elections. Ooh. So, the primary mechanism in place facilitating this flood of private money is a super PAC. You've probably heard of super PACs and how they've essentially taken over the role of traditionally filled by individual campaign donors in political action committees, which is what PAC stands for. But super PACs aren't the end of it. There are puppet political nonprofits, business associations, and now single candidate dark money outfits that, as of September 21st, have already raised $25.1 million. So that's five times the amount spent by this time in the 2012 election cycle. So why does this matter? So small private donors still exist, of course. Their campaign contributions are still capped at about $5,000 per individual, making them the tip of the iceberg in political campaign spending. Inter-super PACs and single candidate committees, who because of this aforementioned SCOTUS rulings, have the ability to slither in between campaign finance laws and flood our elections with the unlimited corporate money, the dark money. Okay, guys, so why does this matter? Well, because as we have discussed many times on this program, there are not very many conglomerates in this world. So that means a small amount of people have a major influence, and that's not fair. Like, we are a mass populace and we can make a difference regardless of the spending, but it starts with being aware, which is why I want you to be aware of this. So he goes on to say that one of the biggest 20 spenders, only one is openly committed to a liberal viewpoint, which gives conservatives an advantage. That said, while Democrats have questioned the legality of dark money groups, they have not discounted the possibility of utilizing this tactic in addition to super PACs. So this is a really in-depth article. I encourage you guys to read the most of it, but I just wanted to open up the conversation of who owns our candidates. And I wanted to share with you that things can differ regardless of who's spending the most money. Like, for example, notable candidate is Bernie Sanders, and a lot of people are super excited about him because he's not a conventional candidate, and he's managed to raise just as much money as President Obama did during the same time in the election, which is really interesting. And also notably, he's been drawing bigger crowds. So I encourage you to read further into that article because it goes into compare that situation. And it's really interesting. So in relation to that topic, something that I didn't get enough time to talk about last week, which was really, really important, and I wanted to tell you guys that I'm working on this right now, like gathering some connections so that we can build a nice big picture regarding vaccines. And that's a topic we've been discussing for a couple years now, and it's very controversial. The idea of and the notion of vaccines. And so I want to share with you guys a little bit about how the body works in relation to vaccines and why you should be concerned with the fact that the government wants to impose them upon us. They want to make it mandatory that children have them before they attend school. And they managed to pass a bill called Senate Bill 277. And that basically states that parents have no right in saying that they don't want their children to be vaccinated. And currently there's an exemption, like a medical exemption and a religious exemption. And they're taking away exemptions that are not warranted by a doctor. So you have to go to a doctor, convince them that it's essential to your child's life to not receive the vaccine, and only then you're warranted this exemption, which I hear is quite difficult. So bottom line is that this had already passed and people were very upset. So they got together and they took a stand, and now we get a chance in November to vote on whether or not we want to allow this bill to continue to be, what's the word I'm looking for, required or initiated into our livelihoods. And I want to start off by saying that, like, backwards land, where we reside now, is essentially like us overcomplicating things. And we do that so that we can capitalize on them. And this is demonstrated across every system within our society. So they've taken what grows from nature, you know, a plant, and it comes with integrity and it has a purpose. Like, every plant has purpose from the top to the bottom, typically. And what we do then as humans, as consumers, is we take this plant and then we take it to a lab and we do all this fancy stuff to it. And then in doing so, we create a bunch of side effects, which that can't be argumented. And because in this country, the FDA only dictates that when you create a substance, it only has to work. It doesn't have to be completely safe, which is horrible on its own. But anyway, so they take this drug and then they're allowed to market it because it works to treat that particular symptom despite all the side effects, and they make a ridiculous amount of money on them. And in the meantime, people get trapped in the system of necessity. And besides destroying their flora, which we'll touch on, and depleting their immune system, which we'll also touch on, they're perpetually supporting this system of illness because no longer are conditions actually addressed. We just, like, cover symptoms, right? So we're getting caught in so many different avenues, but your health is what matters the most. And I want to share with you guys how your immune system works. So when you eat something, first place it comes in contact with is your mouth. The saliva is there to break things down, you know, has enzymes to assist with digestion. And then you obviously consume it and it goes into your belly. And in there is an incredible network of different enzymes and bacteria that continue the process. We all have bellies, right? We know how this process feels. So when you take a drug or a pill, it does something to that delicate balance inside your gut, which is like initially the first place of defense. And it's really important because what's in there and how it's balanced dictates every function, every hormone, every system within your body. So wouldn't it make most sense to support what you already have, that natural defense, instead of taking things that imbalance it and throw it off? So that's part of it, though, is people have gotten trapped into that necessity. And you know, you're not only losing your rights to choose, but you're losing the notion that you don't need those things. So that was just an idea, essentially, that was sold to us one point or another. So I just want to stress to you guys how awesome it is to be a person with an active immune system and to just be aware that vaccines aren't proven. And just as our candidates are bought, according to the article written by Mr. Anderson there, so are the people who are creating such substances. So you want to take action and support the people who've worked so hard to give us a right to vote on this bill, and just consider the notion of the immune system and its role within the function of your body. And if you can, protect the future Americans that will be enacting all of our work too. And just to touch on that, our guest last week, who was Matt Powers, the guy whose school teacher turned organic gardener, an author in permaculture, lecturer online, advocates that people don't get vaccinated just because he was in the system. Like, and we didn't get to talk about this too much last time because we were so excited about vegetables, but he saw himself, like, how the children are pressured into fitting into a model, and that's exactly why he's taking a stand against that. So just know that regardless of who has the most money, like, people have power. So on to our next topic here. More news from Backwards Land. This is a really interesting article that I read earlier here. The headline is, single mother sentenced to 3 years in prison for stabbing a pedophile to death. I'll just let that sit in for a minute. And if you guys want to join in, you guys can check out this on the antimedia.org as well. And this is by Michaela Witten. Is that how you say that? Witten? Sorry, Michaela. So Michaela's from the United Kingdom. I'm sorry. She is from the United Kingdom. So Sarah Sands, a single mother of five from East London, has been sentenced to 3.5 years in prison for stabbing a convicted pedophile to death. The jury of 10 women and two men deliberated for 3 days before clearing Sands of murder and convicting her of the manslaughter of Michael Plested by reason of loss of control. Within weeks of hearing that her neighbor, Michael, had sexually molested three children, Sands, who's 32, armed herself with a knife and stabbed him 8 times at his flat in Canning Town. After the attack, Plested, who was awaited trial on 2 charges of sexual assault against children and was under investigation for a third, crawled into the hallway and bled to death. During the hearing, the Old Bailey heard that Plested had previously served sentences for indecent assault and burglary, and had 24, oh my gosh, had 24 previous convictions for sexually assaulting boys between 1970 and 1991. Before the new allegations emerged, the 77-year-old had become a known community figure and was running a brick-and-brack shop when Sands befriended him and began bringing meals to his flat. Whoa, she played the long con in this one. So during the trial, Sands sobbed, saying that she had not meant to harm him despite going to his flat with a knife. Instead, she claimed she wanted him to claim his crimes so young accusers would not have to attend court. On the latency of the sentence, the judge described the case as unique and claimed Sands had lost control rather than taking the law into her own hands and engaged in he added, this was a case in which the defendant promptly gave herself up to the police in a highly stressed state, never disputed responsibility for the killings as a matter of fact, did not take the opportunity to get rid of evidence, and demonstrated remorse. Sands has been in custody for 10 months and could be released on the parole in 11 months' time. So, this brings up my next topic, which is something we talk about often on the program, and is something that's been debated a lot recently in our society, is vigilante. That was the word that stuck me early. Are we, as a society who's being oppressed and suppressed by governments and police and all the other forces in control, how are we to justify these types of situations if we're to move forward? Because a lot of people say that the solution to our problems now are building communities via agriculture, via sustainability, via recycled resources, as a collective unit. And one thing that's always brought up is, how are we going to handle people like this in our society? And what's the best method? And what's even scarier, and something I want to bring up, is if our current system is so effective, this is my argument, how can a man repeatedly do these types of things to various people over like a 30 plus year period? So there's definitely a flaw in the current system. The notion is, though, is like, what's the handle on this? And I want to remind you guys of something we talk about all the time, which is compassionate communication and nonviolent communication. And I think to kind of not put a Band-Aid on this type of situation, the same that we wouldn't hope to do with our bodies and our immune system, is we want to build people, we want to start at the beginning. Like, from the moment they emerge, we want to have a system in place where we're teaching people how to communicate in a nonviolent fashion, or how to clear up words, or how to support each other. Because a lot of time, and Marshall Rosenberg, who's the teacher of nonviolent communications, great teacher and lecturer, you guys can check him out on YouTube, and he goes in super in depth into this stuff. But he says that people react in such horrific ways, like the man doing those horrible things to children, or the lady killing him as a result of her anger, that we do those things when our needs aren't met. So why are these people's needs not met? Well, there's some sort of failure, and this is not even in America. This is in the United Kingdom, where these systems have a failure rate. And a lot of people separate themselves into groups. You know, we divide ourselves into anarchists, into feminists, into All Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, Police Lives Matter, just to give some examples, Democrats, Republicans. I'm always caught in the notion of why. Like, how are we ever gonna agree to anything if we're, from the beginning, we're not setting a common ground of being humans. So I just wanted to make that notion that, you know, violence is gonna happen and wonderful things are gonna happen, but we gotta start at the beginning, and we can't do that by growing food full of chemicals and pesticides and polluting the environment and filling people full of poisons and then not reforming them when we get a chance. So I hate to be so blue and gray today, guys, but that's just something that's been on my mind, is that we've got to stop with the freaking labels beyond human. And I wanted to bring up a few topics to kind of give me a segue into something that was really profound today and a great example of just this notion. And I have been playing it in my mind in the background today just because it struck such a chord with me. And I thought to myself, oh, I got to make sure to integrate that into a program sometime soon, because it's that important. But we already had an entire show planned today, but obviously that didn't happen. So I guess you guys get a really cool story. Mm. So I'm at the third bank, ironically, that I need to go to for the day so that I can extract all my, essentially my life hours to write for these Federal Reserve notes, so that I can pay to live in a place where I was born. And I'm in line, and this lady, I can hear her talking behind me to her daughter, or to a young girl, I didn't know it was her daughter at the time, and she's saying, oh, I like her hair, and they're just going off and off. And we sparked a conversation, and we got into the topic of dowries and how culture used to be different, and people used to build communities and gather resources and merge their families based on resources and practicability. And she couldn't understand the notion, and her mom surprised me by bringing up a very touchy topic of, it was very serious that the woman remained pure and that they would provide these types of promises in exchange for cattle or land or gold or whatever the case. And the woman then said that, you know, it was as serious as the family bringing out the sheets to prove that the lady was pure. Did you know that? That these families would I know this is graphic, but there's a reason. The women would bring out the sheets with the blood, and they would see, show like, look, this girl was pure. And then I brought up the notion, I know, right? All the people in line were like, they were so horrified. You should have seen the faces. And I'm sitting there like a really intrigued human, like, oh my God, look at this. Look at these people. This is our society in a nutshell, like purely demonstrated. And we're getting all these horrific looks. And I took the opportunity to say, you know, and what's even more upsetting is that we didn't have understanding of the body at the time, that not everyone develops the same way. And like, imagine the women who didn't have that part, they were just instantly killed, right? Perceived as non-pure. And everyone in the line at the bank, because it was long, was just like, ugh! And this old lady about 80 years old, looked at me dead in the face and just like, you're disgusting for talking about these things. And I was like, oh, well, I appreciate your opinion, but do you know how many people have died so that I can stand right here and speak my mind? And she stopped. And she thought about it for a second. And I was like, ma'am, pardon me, but like, how are we ever going to move forward as a society if we can't talk about the things that are taboo? Or if we can't there we go. We got our call back. Sorry, guys, went down for a second there. So it was just a really awkward moment in society where I found a great opportunity to educate people, like in a moment of just utter like awkwardness. Like, there's no better word. It was just complete awkwardness. It really changed the energy, though, because everyone went from being really angry at each other to like really like stuck in like perplexed pondering to like, okay. And then I looked in that young girl's eyes because she was horrified. She was so embarrassed by her mother. And I told her, I'm like, you have no idea right now, but your mom is just the right amount of weird. And she's building character for you, and she's going to be able to talk to you about anything. And it just kind of gave me hope that people are building better people, and they are talking about things that have been erased from textbooks, and they're instilling different ideas within the youth, like growing food and using herbal medicine and speaking your mind. And I just want to bring light to the darkness that, you know, you can transmute any situation, like this show. I'm sorry it's so random, but we had an entire hour planned with somebody, and that didn't work out, but you just got to keep rolling with it, right? Just like the old lady who's disgusted. So, let's see here. Speaking of all the people who have died for freedoms, there's a really important article that I want to discuss on theantimedia.org. This one's by S.M. Gibson. This was also published today. And a lot of people are reading it. It's titled, Airstrikes by U.S. Ally, have killed 500 children since March. Shocking, right? So one of the United States' strongest allies is currently inflicting as much carnage as any other nation in the world. Instead of being vilified for their part in a staggering amount of human rights atrocities, the critics go mute and the bloodshed is rewarded. The news regarding Saudi Arabia this week is too abundant to include in any one headline. According to UNICEF, the ongoing attacks by U.S.-backed Saudi Arabian-led coalition in Yemen have resulted in the deaths of at least 505 children since March 26, 2015. Another 710 have been left injured, and 1.7 million are at risk of malnutrition. We talked about how important nutrition is earlier, right? So, as Daniel Johnson of UN pointed out, The grievous numbers are equivalent to 8 children killed or maimed in Yemen every day for 6 months. On Monday, a missile from a Saudi-led airstrike struck a Yemeni wedding reception in the village of, oh man, Al-Wahija, that's pretty good, located near the Red Sea. The explosion resulted in 131 deaths, and the incident is being labeled as one of the deadliest attacks on civilians during the six-month conflict. In total, there have been 7,217 civilian casualties, including 2,355 killed and 4,862 wounded in the 6 months since the fighting began, according to the United Nations, that is. Despite these statistics, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Saudi Arabia, while addressing the United Nations General Assembly on Thursday evening, had the audacity to scold the international community's inability to end the bloodshed in Syria. Abdel Ahmed Al-Jubeir, hypocritically stated that the world has been unable to save the Syrian people from the killing machine that is being operated by Bashar al-Assad. It gets worse. Last month, it was announced that Saudi Arabia would head the UN Human Rights Council, yes, you read that correctly, a decision that mirrors unfathomable satire. According to cables released by WikiLeaks, Saudi Arabia, along with their despicable human rights record, originally made their way on the council under very questionable circumstances in 2013. The cables allege that in a vote trading deal was made in secret between Britain and Saudi Arabia to ensure both countries were elected to the council. Days prior to the announcement that Saudi Arabia would head the UNHRC, the Saudi regime released their decision to deny the final appeal of 20-year-old Ali Mohammed al-Namir, age 17 at the time of his arrest. The pro-democracy activist will be executed for taking part in an anti-government protest in 2012. Despite pleas from human rights organizations around the globe, it has been ruled that the young man will be put to death by way of crucifixion any day now. Can you believe that? Even the United Nations has called for the Saudis to halt the execution. Yes, the same UN whose Human Rights Council they now head. So far in 2015, Saudi Arabia has executed at least 134 people, according to Amnesty International, most of those by beheading. It is scandalous that the UN chose a country that has beheaded more people this year than ISIS to be head of a key human rights panel, said UN Watch Executive Director Hal Nour. Petrodollars and politics have trumped human rights. A number of US politicians have recently been asked to weigh in on Saudi Arabia and their obvious penchant for barbarity by journalist Li Feng from The Intercept. They may have been bombing civilians, which is actually not true. Senator John McCain said when asked about civilian casualties in Yemen. Civilians aren't dying, Feng asked. No, they're not, the senator replied. Oh, I'm sure civilians die in war, but not nearly as much as the Houthis has executed. Feng also approached Senator Chris Coons and asked him to comment on the Saudi-led airstrikes in Yemen. I forgot you guys can see me drinking water now. As the co-founder of Human Rights Caucus in the Senate, I do think we need to pay attention to human rights all over the world. Regardless of where human rights violations arise. When Feng pressed the senator to elaborate on Saudi Arabia specifically, Coons immediately ended the conversation. Coons ignored me and continued walking into the building, even though a staff member accompanying him had just informed the senator that he had plenty of time before his speech. The staff member offered to exchange contact information for a lengthier comment later. I emailed and did not hear back, according to Feng. In case you are left pondering why you hear corporate news outlets harp on the incivilities of numerous Middle Eastern nations ad nauseam, while the brutalities carried out by Saudi Arabia are never uttered, it is worth mentioning that, coincidental or not, the second largest stockholder in Fox News 21st Century is a man by the name of Prince Alawid bin Talal. The prince, who just so happens to be a member of the Saudi royal family, is also a prominent stockholder in Citigroup and Twitter. So, what does that mean to you? You know, we've covered a wide array of topics tonight, all relating to how rights and liberties are being stripped from people, not just in America, but all over the world. And I hope that I communicated to you that it starts with separatism and the labels that we give ourselves. And even though we didn't get to talk to a scientist / gardener / innovator / author / teacher about understanding roots, I think with the montage of all these stories and ideas from around the globe, one can ponder and conclude that perhaps getting back to our roots is a lot more than titles and money-mongering freaks' power over us, because people are so much more than a dollar, and you're so much more than a cell or an immune system or a voice or even a nipple. Like, there's so many radical things that we fight over that are so silly and are simply just a squandered waste of time. And it's disheartening, though. And that's why we do this, though, as the anti-media, is we try to give you guys not only the news, but things to empower you as well. Hopefully we give you guys a balance of the two. So in honor of looking at the bright side, despite all of these things, I wanted to encourage you guys to check out not only our network, because it's growing and people can be a part of it. We encourage people to contribute to us, so you can go on the antimedia.org to check that out. You can also find so many topics about what's going on in the world and how to empower yourself, not only on our channel, but on so many other channels on the UCY network. You can go to ucy.tv/live starting soon to hear this, as well as other shows. So it's just an example of how people are gathering and fighting the elite despite all of the negative in the world. And it's a process. And like, for how many centuries have we heard anarchists or agorists or peaceful world leaders tell us to change our perception to the inward, right? Like, why is it so hard to do that, though? It's because we're constantly being bombarded by the people who have all this. They have your attention. So if you're here now and we have your attention, in honor of getting back to roots as a human being, not a human doing, I want to spend the next 20 minutes talking about how you can do that. My background is health and nutrition and gardening. And with a combination of all of these things, I've not only entertained these ideas of self-preservation, but got to experience so many people living it. So it's kind of been solidified into my mind, and I always come back to this. And number one is, you are always in control, no matter what, of how much oxygen goes into your body. So I know a lot of people are suffering from panic attacks right now, just because they feel like the world's gonna explode any day now, just with all the chaos going around everywhere. Myself included, I've had lots of anxiety lately. So you guys can bring it back with, believe it or not, 4 breaths. From breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, reset your nervous system, which dictates every function. So if you want to feel better, like soon, 4 deep breaths every time for the win. And then another thing that is very important is stretching. And I know a lot of us on the staff lately have been introduced to the idea of yoga, which has been super transformational, not only here, but to a lot of people we know. And what's really important about that is that yoga is a practice, and it reminds you that the notion we discussed tonight, that you're not just a human, you know, you're a being too. So you've got this body, you've got your emotions, and you've got your analytical mind. And the cool thing about yoga is that it kind of forces you to like be in your body and experience all the things that are occurring in there. And then you kind of have this moment of connectivity, believe it or not, what a notion, where you kind of process that thing, whatever's kind of ailing you, you go, And you have a little moment attached to it where you let it go. And it's such a healing practice because that's not something we're taught to do. We're not taught to sit there and go, what's ailing your body? Have you focused on it and let it leave itself and healed as an individual? Like these things are not common knowledge. So that's what's beautiful about it, though, is it kind of gives you your power back, and you have this idea of control. And that's really important, because anything that instills that within a person matters. Because in a world where we're led to believe that we don't have control and our rights are being stripped away every second, just having that moment of clarity and power is really, really inspiring. So if you have a moment where you're feeling super freaked out, just try it for once. See what happens. So we talked about breathing. We talked about stretching and the connectivity notion. Another important thing that people overlook is water. And that was going to be a major thing we discussed tonight. And what's really important about drinking enough water is that besides nerve impulse, water controls and stimulates all the systems in your body, like from the way your skin moves and processes toxins, to the way you digest, to the way your cells clean themselves on a cellular level. It's necessary for every muscle and every tendon. And believe it or not, besides being chronically existing in malnutrition and poor oxygen levels, which are like basic essentials of life, the other is people are lacking water. And why is that? Like, why are we lacking essentials? And I guess that's my main point, is that the things that are common knowledge to us existing are not common knowledge, are the things that are necessary for the function of us are not things that people know. And it's important to share these types of things. Like, for example, each person should be drinking their body weight divided in half in ounces every single day. And that's for sedentary activity. So if you're exercising, if you're doing things like yoga or running, you need to increase that level. So you take your weight, say it's 50 pounds, okay, just for example. You divide it in half, that's 25. So that person that weighs 50 pounds needs 25 ounces of water just to function. People don't know that. And another thing is that we're drinking community water, which, believe it or not, is also an industry, and they put so many additives in their water, and we've written many articles about it. And one of the main things that people are concerned with is the fluoride and the process in which water is cleaned, which is usually chlorine. And this is worrisome because fluoride is a heavy metal, and it's accumulating, which means that it just compounds in the body. And the only way to get it out is to eat very certain foods. And it's just an example further of how things occur to us without our notion. You know, we talked about the vaccines, which is an obvious one, but as simple as water, like things have to change. People have to be like the people who gather referendums and oppose bills in on every level. So if you can, just empower people towards their optimal wellness and share things like our programs and our articles, because they are anti. They're not just anti-media, but they're anti-establishment, anti-conventional, anti-typical. And I'm really grateful for you guys listening to my random spontaneous broadcast of awesome mess entanglement. It definitely wasn't planned, and it's definitely a learning experience. And you're welcome. You got to see my face. You all owe me $30 for this hour. So you can all send that to me. That'd be great. No, I'm just kidding. But, oh my gosh. I want to talk about what's on the agenda for next week. In honor of building communities, I've been connecting with a lot of awesome people who are anti-typical, anti-conventional. So I met with this guy, give me just a second here and I'll pull up his information so you guys can find him too. He's local to me, but he, believe it or not, he's one man and he owns a local dojo, I guess you would call it. And he does so much amazing work in the community that even he's attracted the attention of the media, which is kind of an awesome feat of achievement for one guy here. And they're not reporting that he's evil or a molester or anything like that. Like, they're actually supporting him in his cause. So this guy does more than just teach jiu-jitsu. He is specifically working with children towards optimal wellness, which and getting back to roots, which has been our spontaneous theme of the night. And he teaches them from the ground up, like we were discussing. He starts at the beginning, and he teaches them things like how to be healthy, how to exercise, how to cook food, how to prep food. More importantly, he homeschools children, so he's kind of unschooling them, is what people are calling it now, or anti-schooling, which is kind of funny. But he teaches them, and he, like Matt Powers from last week, he integrates exercise, education, and sustainability into homeschool. So he's getting tons of people inspired towards wellness, and he's geared it towards children primarily, which is really inspiring to me to know that there's like a whole new category of little people being grown in a new way. Just like the little old lady I told you about earlier, who was not afraid to discuss really horrific things with her daughter. And that's part of it, though, is we gotta do things that make us uncomfortable, like showing our face to however many people or doing an entire show off the cuff. Or talking about periods in the bank, or showing our nipples in public. Something else to look forward to is I'm working on getting in contact with people who are responsible for the Free the Nipple campaign. If you haven't heard, women everywhere want the right to walk around topless. And some people are upset about the idea, but most people are not. And the reason is that they want to take away the, not the sacredness of the female body, but the taboo aspect. And not arguing that the female body is definitely more attractive than the man body, but what if that's because I don't see it every day? And that's their point. If women were able to walk around topless, they would not only be able to feed their babies in public without shame or feeling inferior, being pushed into the bathroom, which is kind of gross, so they'd be able to sustain a growing little person via breast, which ironically develops the immune system in an ideal way, who would have known, but they would be able to do that without ridicule. And that's really important because women need that freedom, babies need that freedom, and maybe as a society, if we're exposed more to nipples, not only will we grow healthier people, but some argue that women will get assaulted less sexually because men will be kind of numb to the notion of nipples, which is a really funny thing to say, but it's true. So I recently attended a Free the Nipple movement, which was really interesting. There were enough women there, more than I thought, and a lot of them were really proud to be there. And I only got to talk to a couple women, but the one thing I asked them was, do you identify as a feminist? Because one of my platforms as an individual is separatism starts with these terms. And interestingly, they said no. Like, we're here for equality, just as humans. So I encourage you guys to check out that campaign. It's relatively new, and people aren't very conscious of it. But it's just one more little thing besides demanding to know what's in vaccines, what's in your water, what's in your food, what's in the pocket of your individual running for office. It's just part of your personal power. So I encourage you guys to check out the Free the Nipple movement because it's going to be more prevalent to you soon, I'm sure. And this is just a test, so I'm not sure if we'll be doing this for following programs, but we're definitely trying it out. And I want to thank you guys a lot for joining me. And I'm actually going to catch up with you guys on Monday, okay? Thank you.
We'll call it a reality, cause there's no illusion. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo, stereo.